Oh my God! Has it been a week already?
It has. It only feels like minutes.
It has been. Ah, the magic of radio.
Yeah.
My name is Mal. With me, as always,
Dr. Morbius,
and this is Asian Cult Cinema. We do what the name implies. We talk about Asian cult cinema, and that's the end of that story.
That's the end of the show. Have a good week and drive carefully, folks.
That was the shortest show ever. They'd be sad.
But we've been cutting back on time because we need more.
That's not true at all. I'm excited. This coming week, I'm going up to another pinball event.
Oh God!
Yeah, I know. And this one has raffles to win pinball machines.
Oh, that's
You know you're not gonna.
That's why that truck is there in case you win a pinball machine.
No, that truck's there because I had to take. Okay, now we all know. if you listen to the show, you know my father passed away.
About a year and a half ago. Yeah, yeah.
Well, he bought this truck, and there was this big fifth wheel trailer hitch on the back of it. To haul their camper. My mom and dad did camping.
Oh, you're taking it off.
So we took the hitch off, and we're going to sell it. They're like $600 new, so I'm going to get like $300. But you got to get the rails off. So before you came, I got one of the rails off, and then after you leave, I get to crawl back under there and hammer the other rail off.
Oh, yay. Your mom drives that?
Yeah.
Oh, so she's like a trucker, huh?
I wish she wouldn't. But she does. Like,
you should get her a nice little like Japanese car.
Yeah, little Toyota Corolla.
Yeah,
she loves it. Like, part of it's like, oh, that was Dad's last truck.
That's so sentimental value.
I said, okay, Mom, give me the truck and you take that. I'll get rid of Frankenstein and.
Yeah, you give her your Speedmobile. Here, Mom, have this car. You know,
I'm gonna keep my Speedmobile. Okay. I would get rid of Frankenstein truck and keep that truck. But you know,
Frankenstein truck, it might not be good for Mom though.
No, she wouldn't drive that. Most people couldn't drive that truck. Anyway, hey, welcome to Asian Truck Cinema.
Yeah.
Chapter 47 of the Nissan Pickup.
Anyway, we're talking about.
Very interesting movie this week.
Very interesting movie.
One is actually from Asia. Asian cult cinema.
Which I actually saw in a theater back in 1966.
What? Oh, yeah. My God. This is one I had not heard of before.
Which is surprising.
The reason I picked it was because it was on. I was watching these. What is that? A Century of Science Fiction?
Yeah, whatever.
It was like a show. With Christopher Lee. Doing the intro for it.
Oh, is that where you saw it in the Christopher Lee one?
Yeah, yeah. And Vato was like, well, I'm watching that. A Japanese take on Frankenstein.
Odd movie. Frankenstein Conquers the World from 66. I first learned about this movie because it was on the cover of an issue of Famous Monsters. Now, Famous Monsters was like when I was a kid and we were all kids, that was like the first and greatest monster magazine. All these great pictures from all these movies, kind of corny writing, but that was it, man. And there was also kind of like promotion for new movies coming out too, because we didn't have internet or television. Well, we did have television, we only had three channels, so we did have a lot of trailers on TV to show you for these movies. But anyway, so I saw this, and I was already into monsters. I was like, oh, my God, this is so cool. Frankenstein turns into a giant. We got to see this movie. So, so my dad and my mom and I were like, well, we always pick the movies. You get to pick the movie this time.
That was the last time, Dr. Morbius.
Pretty much. Ever.
Back then, you weren't a doctor, though. You were just like an intern, right?
No, I was operating on something. I don't know. But anyway... so I go, let's go see Frankenstein Conquers the World and Tarzan and the Valley of Gold. It's a double feature.
Wow.
At the Palm
Springs. Twice the value for half the price.
I'm telling you, 3 hours of entertainment for like a mere dollar.
In South Florida, 3 hours of air conditioning is worth the price.
True. So we went to the Palm Springs Theater, the late, great, awesome Palm Springs Theater, which I have so many stories of. But anyway, so we go in and the first movie is Tarzan. So we're like, all right. So we're watching it, and everybody's cool. Dad's cool.
Who played Tarzan in that one?
This guy called Mike Henry, who was kind of like James Bondish Tarzan.
There's been a lot of Tarzans.
This was like the '60s Tarzan.
Okay, because some were really beefcake, some were a little bit skinnier. But
Mike was a football player. He was a football player, but he was
the trees bent as he swung around.
But he was cool. He was cool. So we're good.
We're cool with you, Mike. Don't come correct us.
We're cool. We like it. Mike Henry was also in one of those Burt Reynolds. Good old boy movies. And I can't think which one it was. I'm not sure if he was
all of them. Hooper or So, eastbound and down, loaded up and trucking.
So, yeah, so we got through that, and then all of a sudden, Frankenstein Conquers the World comes up, and like,
did you cheer? Did you jump and be like, as a kid, I would have been like, yeah!
No, it wasn't like a kiddie show where all the kids are like, you know, on soda and whatever. It was a regular show. We're watching it, and then like, okay. And then all of a sudden, this giant Baragon monster comes out of the... And Baragon is like this, like, goofy little lizard-like, I don't know, doggy-looking monster with a big light bulb horn.
Yeah, he would have been... he's like a cousin of the giant Gila monster from that movie we did the other couple weeks ago. On
Except better, I think. But,
yeah, better. So, you know.
And my dad's like, in the theater, he's like, oh my God, probably in Spanish. He goes like, oh my God, that monster's got a light bulb on his head. What the hell is that? And he starts laughing. And I'm like, oh no.
We're going to get beat up and or kicked out.
No, this is my movie. Don't make fun of my movie. So like whenever Baragon would come up, my dad would start laughing hysterically. So, you know, God rest his soul. You know, he made this movie a different experience than I was expecting. But he may have created MST at the same time. So I don't know, you know.
Dad, we can't substantiate that claim.
We can't substantiate, but I'm going to. I'm going to substantiate it.
Sure.
I'm going to raise my right hand and put my book on the Bible and say, I swear to God, he created MST right there on the spot. Because a young Joel Hodgson could have been visiting Florida at the time and been
from Wisconsin
and going like, this Cuban guy is making fun of the movie. I have an idea, which I will later formulate into a big time money making venture.
And but that, my friends, is called suspension of disbelief.
It's called the slippery slope, my friends.
That's a lot of leaps.
But that's a slope that I always take.
Someone's using their jump to conclusions, man.
Yes, and you know what? I will always I'd rather jump to conclusions than jump off a plane with a parachute. But anyway. So anyway, this is from this is a co-production of American and Japanese.
I think they were starting to realize that was a very profitable formula.
And this movie is a glorious mess.
Yes, it is. Let me read you the official what this is all
Nick
about.
Nick Adams.
Okay. Frankenstein Conquers the World, 1965. Probably hit over here, 1966.
66. Yeah. Summer of 66.
Yeah. Okay. During World War II, a human heart taken from a certain lab in Europe, Dr. Frankenstein's, is kept in a Japanese lab. When it gets exposed to the radiation from the bombing of Hiroshima, the heart grows in size, mutates, and spouts appendages, and eventually grows into a complete body and escapes.
Oh, yeah.
Ladle, a feral boy with a certain physical deformity, large head and flat top, is captured by scientists who refer to the boy as Frankenstein. The creature grows to a height of 20 feet, escapes again, fights police... Oh, wait, spoiler alert. Escapes again, fights police and the army, and is practically indestructible. Later, a reptilian monster...
Okay. Don't we're going to talk about this movie. Don't do the whole thing.
Well, this is just a summary. Later, a reptilian monster goes on a rampage. Eventually, the Frankenstein creature and reptilian face off in a terrible battle. So, director, Ishiro Honda.
Yes, from all the Godzilla movies.
All the Godzilla movies. All the good ones. And so was the music was...
For Kuben.
Yeah, I was like,
from
man.
From the good ones.
Yeah, from the good ones. Right. Ruben Berkovich is the story writer, and then...
Well,
Kimura is the screenplay.
It was based on an idea by an American writer called Jerry Soule, who was a sci-fi writer, and then he got adapted into this tweaked constantly by the producers and and all that. Because there's a version of this movie where at the end the producers wanted Frankenstein not only to fight Baragon but a giant octopus. And basically,
of course.
When it was put together and finally ready for release and watched, they took that scene off because it seemed to make no sense that where would an octopus come out of the middle of the forest?
Yeah.
So, but apparently the producers thought that an octopus would be great in this movie because people loved it when King Kong versus Godzilla. Yeah.
In fact, the cut you gave me is from a creature feature off TV, ripped from off TV, and with Roger Corman, which is great to see him. All right, we're going to take a break and we'll come right back.
Chamber of blood and gore.
Slash her throat.
Tonight, I'll bathe in the richness of your warm blood.
Schooled in carnage and blood, she slaughtered 610 nubile young virgins. The female butcher in dripping color, rated R.
If you can dodge a wrench, you can dodge a ball.
What?
Ah, the female butcher.
Countess Elizabeth Báthory.
Nice.
Countess Dracula, I think yeah. she was called.
All right.
So, this is a strange, oddball
yeah.
movie.
And now, off air, I had said, is this readily available on DVD?
I think so.
He says, yeah.
I don't know about readily available, but you can find it on Amazon.
Yeah, so you even said, with Amazon, everything's readily available.
Because if you go to a store, if you go to Best Buy, it's not going to be there.
Well, no, nothing I ever watch is at Best Buy.
Yeah, or even like Barnes
Best Buy
and
hates
Noble.
Me.
Yeah, well, you know, that's
they
the way
hate
it
us all.
Goes. Yeah. So, yeah, this movie starts off in like... some Frankenstein's laboratory during Nazi Germany era.
Oh, so fast you see the Sieg Heil and you're like, oh, really? But okay, whatever, you
and
know.
And the doctor's got this beating heart in a suitcase and it's like...
The doctor also looked like a beatnik.
The doctor also like is overacting. Like the beginning of it is like they're trying to do a silent movie. It's
yeah,
like,
that's the way they were acting. It was like it was a silent movie era. Yeah. And this guy who's this... I swear he was a beatnik in like... one of those daddy-o movies where they're like, you know, going driving around with motorcycles, you know, hassling shopkeep.
He probably, was, I don't know. So anyway, the Germans take away the beating heart, and then they take it on the ship because they're gonna give it to the Japanese to experiment or something
yeah.
like that.
Because so, you know what Germans were? They were known for their giving nature.
They were known for their giving nature. They like to give you, you know.
Yes.
Anyway,
trauma.
So then they're on their they take the thing on a submarine and they're like, what is this? It goes, oh, I don't know, it's just some weird beating something, or I don't know, what is it, a bomb? Okay.
Who knows?
So then there's like some like disruption or whatever. No, they're taking it to the, and they give it to the Japanese. So the Japanese take it and they're going to take it to Japan, but then Hiroshima
yeah.
hits around the same time.
Yeah.
So it's like, oh, wow. And then, you know, okay, so that's a lot of stuff going on for the first 10 minutes or whatever. You know, so then we go to modern time, and then it's like, what's the deal with it? Is that, that's when you meet, what, Nick Adams as
yeah.
the doctor?
Yeah.
And Kumi Mizuno as his, like, you know, hot Asian girlfriend or whatever. And then, you know...
Very formal. And he immediately...
He really doesn't seem like a doctor.
And he immediately takes over every scene.
Basically.
Everyone just stands there and wait for him to bark orders, and I'm like, I don't think that's how things work in Japan, but whatever. They're like, they'd be like, let the stupid gaijin talk, then we're going to do what we're going to do anyway. But
yeah,
now,
yeah.
Like, now he just says, oh, you've got to get over there and do this and some of that and there, and everyone just scurries away, and you're like, is he king? Is he king of Japan? Weird.
That's just the way he acted, man.
What's great.
The gaijin is king of Japan. Didn't you know
that? He was the alpha male at all times, apparently.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that's the way Nick Adams was at. He was in a lot of television, a lot of movies. He was in West Side Story, I believe, or Rebel Without a Cause, one of those.
Wow.
Anyway, so then then all of a sudden we start hearing these reports of this kid running around, like, killing... Mm.
Eating
animals,
dogs and
animals, and they're like, what the hell's that all about? And then yeah. it shows you the kid running around, and he kind of looks like he's like challenged, I guess is
yeah.
the right word.
It's like
yeah.
like a just this odd thing, and they're like, well, wait, there's reports that say he came out of the Hiroshima, and they're like, nobody could live like that long and
yeah, exactly, and
without a parent, you know, he must be crazy, something, and you're like,
yeah. And then there's like some other scene where like these kids go to school and all of a sudden they go inside and there's this rabbit mauled up, so that's like, you know,
yeah.
Frankenstein Jr. eating
and,
anything inside,
and
he's
that,
very hungry.
Yeah, and that is also when we saw the very, very famous classic Japanese shot of showing children in tiny shorts running. Japan
yeah.
cinema loves running children, and the more the better. As if they're running to and fro and running through fields and running to tell people things, they can't get... The camera loves it in their tiny little 60s shorts. It's just odd.
Okay.
And every movie I ever watch, they show Japanese families running with some guy yelling, and they show little kids who have much too much power running in and out of scenes.
But there was no... Huh.
They have a lot. No, there was no. And they also have a lot of security clearances, it seems like. The kids in Japan, they can get in and out of all kinds of stuff.
Oh,
it's amazing.
It was the 60s. It was a
freer
time.
Yeah, probably.
You can do whatever you want.
All right. Power to the people, man.
So then you see Nick and Kumi have like a thing going on, and she invites them to the house, and they're having a little kimono
nice
party.
Nice, yeah, very formal dinner.
Then she hears something outside. What's that outside? And then she sees like, you know, feral boy there.
He gets hit by a taxi.
And he's like staring at her. She's staring at him, and they're all like,
this taxi hits him. And then the taxi just drives away. He's like, nah, and he just leaves.
And the kid's like, you know, ow. And then he just like splits, and they're like, I think that's...
The lady throws down a bag of like goods to eat.
You know, and the kid takes off, you know, and they're like, I wonder if that's him. He goes, yeah, maybe he'll come back and we can like, you know, like, find out what the deal is with this kid.
The slightly green flat-topped Frankenstein kid. I wonder if that's him. Yeah. Might be, unless there's two of those in Japan.
Yeah, well...
There's not.
Well, you know. So then you meet another doctor, and they're all talking.
They're just throwing doctors at you left and right. There's just doctors everywhere, you know.
So then finally, I forgot, how did they end up catching him? Did he just, like, end up going...
No, they did that weird, like... They're like, they tried to mimic the people with the pitchforks and torches, and they go to that cliff.
Oh, no, what happens was, yeah, that's right, that Nick and Kumi go out to the beach.
Yeah, and he's there. All these people are, like, putting ladders, and there's just this series of catacombs. And then finally she's like, no, let me do it. And then, of course, Nick Adams is like, no, we got it. And they're like, oh, okay, see ya. The cops leave. And then she talks him out.
Yeah, right.
Now he's in the lab, and they're like, oh.
And they're trying to do it. They're doing experiments on him, and they're like trying to figure out, well, how did this kid survive Hiroshima? And like, how is it that like that was 20 years ago? And he's like, you know,
yeah.
Because I don't know. I guess this movie was set in 65. I'm not sure. You know,
because earlier the doctor's also like,
oh, because the heart mutated throughout the year, so finally it turned into a kid.
Right, and that's what happened. But also like the doctor when they were having their formal kimono dinner was like, look, you know. I'm going to leave Japan, and you should come with me because I came here to study radiology to do good.
This
is just more of the same crap. So that's now he's like, I'll use this kid to help study the effects of radiology and how make a serum to make the world a better place.
Yeah,
because you know I know who the Japanese are going to trust with any nuclear stuff.
It's
a white guy. Yeah, a white American.
And then again, the Japanese like, haven't been doing too good with the nuclear stuff. They're having a lot of like leaks and you know.
Well, that's a tragedy. That's still going on. Man.
Well, you know, I think they're trying to bring Godzilla back one way or another.
Oh
you know?
God, I wish there was a world with Godzilla.
No,
shake stuff up a little bit, man.
No, you know.
We're too comfortable.
We got enough Godzillas in this world.
I want a real monster to come out of the sea and destroy stuff. I'm sick of our fake politician monsters we live with.
I work
every day.
Plenty of Godzillas.
I want one that smashes buildings. All right, let's take a quick trailer break, and then we come back. Man, will Frankenstein actually conquer the world? Tune in to find out right after these messages. Yeah.
October the 11th, 1973, Charles Hickson boarded an alien spaceship. By his own lie detector tested story, this is what he saw. George Adamski looked from his Mount Palomar home. This is what he saw. He was not alone. Later, I rode in a flying saucer that actually exists today. Then a psychic explained why those who vanish in the Devil's Triangle are still alive. I searched, and I know that Sasquatch lives. See it all in The Strangest Secrets on Earth, rated G.
Hey, want to hear the most annoying sound in the world?
All right, we are back. The Strangest Secrets on Earth.
Yeah, weird. Well, you know.
Who knows what that could be?
Ancient Japanese secrets of Frankenstein.
Yeah, sure.
So they've got Frankenstein boy, and they're like trying to figure out what the deal is with him. And they're going like, hey, maybe... This kid is, you know, remember the story of Frankenstein's heart or whatever? Maybe this kid grew.
One of the guys is like, oh, I was in that lab.
Yeah, right.
He's like, let me tell you this story. It was this heart that
kept
beating.
Right, you know what it was? That guy who told them that they talked about, I think it was the same guy who played the doctor in the beginning. It was the same actor with makeup playing like,
God, it could have been.
I think it's him. He goes, yeah, here's the story of Frankenstein or whatever. Yeah. That's right.
Yeah, so he tells this story about this heart that wouldn't stop beating. They're like, that's weird. And he's like, yeah, right.
And it's supposedly connected with Frankenstein from the whatever century or whatever. Yeah.
And then this kid is growing, and he's also very a little nutty. He throws like a TV out the window like Keith Moon.
He was the first rock star.
He was Keith Moon.
You know what? Did you see? Did
Keith
you
Moon it? Was in that hotel.
He watched this movie. Okay, check this out. Here was the scene. You hit it exactly. He was sitting there in a room watching TV, but he's watching rock and roll music, and it drove him crazy, and he threw the TV out. That is the example for every rock star. Keith Moon watched this movie.
Keith Moon was sitting next to Joel Hodgkins
in the theater. He watched it in Britain. But anyway, he goes, that's a great idea.
He might have came down. Maybe they were friends sharing popcorn, anyway. And one took away one lesson and one took away another.
You've gone too far.
It's a slippery slope. I live that way.
Mine's less slippery than yours. Yours like apparently. Yours is like slip and slide. You hit the wall on that one.
Looks like someone is not suspension of disbelief.
No, I just have my own theories.
Okay. So anyway.
Don't rain on my parade.
Hey, man.
So anyway, the kid's like all of a sudden getting bigger because they're feeding him some kind of like protein juice or whatever.
Yeah, and
he's like, she goes, wow, am I a growing boy, So now they're like, huh. So the one Japanese doctor goes, so let me think. If he could be the Frankenstein heart grown into, the only way he can find out where he's Frankenstein is to cut off one of his limbs.
They visit, that guy goes, well, you guys just keep feeding him to make him huge. I'm going to go and ask Dr. Frankenstein's only relative. Remember that little scene?
That's the guy I'm talking about.
Yeah, okay.
About.
So he goes there and they're like, oh, yeah, the only way is cut off a limb and it'll grow back. And I'm like,
yeah, that's a great idea.
Like, that's the only way you could tell? How about Yakuza him? Cut off his pinky and see if that grows back.
How about like?
Does it have to be a limb?
It has to be whatever. So that's like Nick Adams like, no, let's not do that. He goes, oh, I really want to do that.
Yeah, the one dude's all about it.
Because Japanese experiment camps, they were really a lot of fun.
We
back
did,
then.
And we did miss something though. There's also this random event: an earthquake happens where this lizard.
Oh, that's right, Baragon.
Baragon pops up. But just then goes away. Like he's just like, how are you? Okay.
Yeah, but
then he just goes underground again.
Foreshadowing.
Just foreshadowing.
Yeah, because the earthquake made him come out, and it was in some other town. That's right. Because then Baragon. So anyway, so then as this is going on, Frankenstein's just getting bigger and bigger, and he's out. He's too big for the cage. He goes, well, maybe we can put him in the zoo or something like that.
Yeah, so they just put him in this cell.
And then it's like the cell's getting too small. So then, they're going to put him in the zoo.
And this was well done, though.
And then...
The size... I'm sorry to interrupt you. The size... As he's growing, this was done pretty well. Like, as far as how they made him really appear big, even though it was just the same dude. Like, how the camera angles were, because,
Oh, and by the way, at this point, I think we've seen two or three different actors play Frankenstein, because it's not the same actor.
No,
that played him as a kid.
Well, a little kid, and then
the adult or whatever. By this time, he's really big, like the Amazing Colossal Man, which is another influence for this movie.
Yeah.
And he's really big. So then, in the meantime, these dopey reporters are like, hey, can we take pictures of him? No, maybe not. I don't know. Well, what about, can we film him? And they're like, I guess,
And then this is my favorite part.
Of course, now we get to the King Kong part where they shoot lights on him and it freaks him out.
And my favorite part is though, hey, I'm gonna get in the cage to do this. I was like, yeah, okay. There's nobody in the world that's gonna have a big camera rig and go inside a cage to film it. Nah, we'll film through the bars, thanks.
So they get in, they flip him out, and he destroys the place because he's humongous now. And he splits, but he leaves his hand, which regenerates. I guess.
Weird. Yeah, because that's how they knew. They didn't get to cutting his leg off.
His hand just came off when he split. Yeah, he just broke the chain.
He just ripped his hand off, and he's like, meh. And then he had a hand again. You're like, okay.
So now he splits.
Running amok all over Japan.
He's taking around. And then Baragon shows up again, and he starts destroying towns or whatever. So they're going like, oh, Frankenstein, he's out free, and he's destroying all these towns. They don't know that it's really Baragon. Yeah. So it's like, okay, now we got two monster dudes, going at it. So then they're trying to figure out, okay, let's see if we can figure out where he is. He's going to have to be going here because this is where the food is or whatever.
Right, and I also was at I wonder if they changed the Godzilla alarm for Frankenstein. Like, did they have a different tone or... Because there was that standard siren for Godzilla.
Yeah, so there was also a lot of that. It was annoying to me after a while, that little horn stink. Da-da-da. It was constantly throughout this movie. I was like, stop it.
Nope.
They didn't stop it.
They should have rocked a pan flute.
Yeah,
that would have been better.
So now you got him. Frankenstein is on the you know, going out there, and like he's not a bad guy. Yeah, he's just trying to live. You know,
he's just there.
He's just, you know, there. He's just a sad, you know, mutant.
He snaps every now and then because people are flashing bulbs in his eyes, but who doesn't?
And he's got a thing for the girl, like Kong.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. Baragon is the real bad guy because he's like eating everything, including fake little horsies and stuff
That. And you know what? Very not Japanese. Like, normally their miniature work is top-notch.
Yeah, the horsey.
This one thing, like, yeah, this Baragon comes up and there's supposed to be a horse, and I was like, that didn't work. You know, they tried. Yeah, that's all I can say. You know. But because usually I'm the first to say Japan has some of the best model work. This stuff is believable.
Yeah.
The scale is believable. This one was like, must have been a rushed shot, or, you know, they're like, I guess just throw it in. Well, whatever.
So now they're on the chase for Frankenstein, and they don't even know about Baragon yet. Yeah. They're confusing him, and then the army starts getting involved. Of course, we have to have an army scene, which is another in all the Japanese movies.
They love tanks.
All the Japanese have to have the army show up.
Japan loves tanks, and those little missiles that like rise up a little bit to shoot.
They love them.
Love them. Love them. Love them. Love them. Love them.
Love them. So you're getting ready.
Who doesn't?
So you're getting ready for the inevitable confrontation between, was it going to be the army and Frankenstein? Is it going to be the army and Baragon?
Oh my God!
Or is it going to be Frankenstein versus Baragon?
Who will tag in who? It's a three-way match. Who knows who's going to come?
So, you know, getting to the climax, they're chasing him, and they're figuring out where he's going to be, and they got the army and everybody there, and then they find Frankenstein, and then all of a sudden, and he's like, because he outgrew his clothes, obviously, and now he's wearing some, like, Tarzan loincloth, and he's, like, growing hair.
I thought that was his hair. Oh, yeah, he's hairy.
I thought he had a loincloth.
And
he did
have a loincloth. Yeah, you're right.
And then, like, Baragon.
Even he knew he had to cover his junk when he's running around.
Oh,
Japan.
Yeah, because, you know, this is a G-rated movie.
Decency laws, bro. Put it away.
Yeah, put it away, man. So then he shows up, and then all of a sudden Baragon shows up, and then everybody's watching this from far, and then there's a big fight to the death for the last 10 minutes between this Frankenstein and Baragon. It's a typical Japanese wrestling
match. I thought this
was
more than 10 minutes, because this kind of went on forever. I'm like, would you get to killing this thing already, or whatever? Because he wasn't doing too good.
No.
He would run up and try to choke it, and then Baragon would kind of toss him off and glow and shoot lasers, and he'd do this little monkey hop thing, which was kind of weird, and then he'd run away, but then he'd come back, and Baragon would burrow in and come out, and then he was always trying to grab the tail. Never got it done. He was like trying to do the swing. One time he swung him around, but it wasn't even worth it. He didn't even do anything, you know.
And then somehow or another fire started.
Well, from Baragon's lasers.
And then so Frankenstein actually tries to burn him, and what he basically does is starts a forest fire in the background. So good job, dude. So
I wish Smokey the Bear would have got radiated and come out of the thing. Is let me tell you something, brother. This is how fires start.
I didn't know Smokey the Bear was Hulk Hogan.
He was for a short time in the '60s.
Okay,
that's how he got his start.
So then they get a big fight to the...
And other lies.
They get a big battle royale, and finally after 10 minutes, Frankenstein ends up beating the crap out of Baragon. Baragon's like, had it, he's out of it.
But then he got cocky.
And then all of a sudden, the ground starts to like...
Because Frankenstein, he killed the
Baragon. He put him up
Baragon,
over his head.
And he's all like, yeah, he raised his hands in triumph. Wah, wah.
Oh, no.
Collapse.
The ground collapsed, and everybody into the pit while all the humans are out there watching and going like, oh, I got my bet on Frankenstein. No, I got my bet on Baragon.
Oh, they would have been betting hardcore.
Oh, yeah, big time.
But then, you know, and then,
but then
of
it
course...
It was a push.
Yep, it was a push, you know. And then of course, Nick Adams had some waxing philosophic as only he could. Let me tell all you guys what I think. And they go, oh, very, very intelligent.
Well, Nick Adams also in Invasion of the Astros, and he's a little bit better in that. He wasn't too believable.
Invasion of the Astromen?
No, Invasion of the Astros, also known as King Kong versus Monster Zero.
Oh,
you
wow. Oh, wow, 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 okay,
wow,
okay.
Wow. Yeah.
Wasn't there like Astromen, Invasion of the Astromen or something?
I think that's another movie. But this movie was a Monster Zero, and then when it came out on DVD, they called it Invasion of the Astromen. But then Val to mention that Godzilla and Ghidorah are in it.
This was fun. This is a fun movie. Very silly, very fun. I liked it. It moved really quickly. The end fight could have been a little bit tidier, but whatever. This was kind of like very... They were kind of overstepping their bounds, taking
over
this on.
Top, yeah.
You know, they this was out of their comfort zone. You
they
know,
tried to do a
ambitious.
Too much.
That's the word I was trying
well,
to.
Well, because it was the original idea was from an American, and they tried to embellish it. I'm sure Jerry Sol, when he wrote the script, didn't put Baragon in it, but the Japanese goes, "Oh, we need a
they
giant
need kaiju.
Lizard.
They had to have kaiju because I mean that's the basis for a lot of this stuff."
And
you
then
know?
The, and then American producers at the end they wanted that octopus that's in one version that was edited, but I'm sure you can find it now online.
They had it from the Plan 9 leftover set,
yeah,
so who cares?
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah, so it's like it was a hot mess of greatness.
It was, yeah, this was one of those that it did follow a storyline. It was very easy to follow. It wasn't like convoluted.
Yeah, it was pretty painless.
And funny. I laughed
funny.
A lot. I thought it was but not laughing at it. Kind
but it
of
was different.
Like laughing with it, I want to say.
It was
you know,
different
it was,
because
yeah.
it was like Frankenstein versus
I know
Japanese monster. This is weird, but it kind of makes it like stand out in a way from a lot of the other movies because it's got like, huh, Frankenstein. Okay.
Exactly.
Nice try.
Exactly.
Nice try.
It's so weird. Out of left field for Japan, you're like,
yeah.
Wait, what?
But that's the American influence. And Americans are like, we need to get Frankenstein in here so kids will go see it. Like me in 66.
Hey, it worked.
Yeah, it worked.
They got their two bits out of you and your
yeah,
family.
They sure
you know?
Did, yeah. Sunday afternoon entertainment.
A lot of fun. I would definitely recommend it.
I
cannot imagine how this escaped me up until this point in my life, but I'm glad I'm glad I saw it. Yeah, you
glad
know.
Glad you saw it and glad we talked.
Yeah,
about
it was
it.
Great. It was a lot of fun. I guess that's it for this week. Do
yeah,
you have anything else?
It. No, that's it, man.
All right.
I didn't bring it today, but in the future we'll do like the quote-unquote sequel called War of the Gargantuas, which really isn't a sequel.
I might have War of the Gargantuas.
Well, let's just check and see if you have it or not.
Because
it's on double feature with Rodan.
Oh, yeah. I think I do have that one.
Oh, we'll do it
Let me
next
double
time.
Check. Let me double check, but yeah.
Okay.
All right. Well, that's it for this week. My name is Mal. With me, as always,
Dr. Morbius.
And we'll see you next week for more awesome Asian cult cinema.